Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Build Shop Podcast. I am one half of your hosting crew, Ryan Brath, and I'd like to welcome to the show my co-host for the day. As always, Mike, how's it going?
B, I'm good. Yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. We got a lot to talk about today. You know, normally we kind of dive into the ins and outs of like club gear, what's on tour, and we will touch on tour shortly, but we're going to do our top five irons of all time. And to give the audience a little bit of a preview, because I think this is going to be fun, I do not know your list and you do not know my list. So I'm very curious to see how this goes, because this is all cross category. Did you go through like different categories? Did you kind of like stick the blades, cavity backs? What is it?
Yeah, it's a mix of everything. There's probably maybe more blades than there should be, but yeah, it's a mix of everything.
Very nice. I got one, but I feel like I have a feeling I think I know what you're going to say, having some conversations with you in the past, but we will get to that shortly. But first of all, what I want to touch on, and this is something I read, I saw on a couple questions on like Instagram. I saw them kind of floating around in the golf like fitting space, and that is Joaquin Niemann won at Riviera. Pretty dominating wire-to-wire finish on a very tough golf course. I think the talking point of the week was how low those guys went. Pristine conditions. I mean, the course looked fantastic. What do you think of the event just in general?
Love it. It's my favorite for multiple reasons. It was great to see T-Dubs in the booth. And I mean, Riv is top of the list to play. So I think the vibe of LA week is always the best.
Tiger was looking healthy. I think that was a big talking point compared to last year. It looked amazing. So
he was looking mighty fine, which is good. Jim Nance was probing him there to get a couple answers out of him, but he was sticking true to his media replies, which is too bad, but I think we'll see him soon enough.
And the other talk of the week, you know, not talking clubs, we'll get to that in just a second, was Adam Scott, 4 days in a row, tan sweater. This man is sticking to earth tones.
Tan sweater. It's funny. I was in a Uniqlo on the weekend and they had an Adam Scott kind of poster of what he was wearing, and they had that tan sweater, and I nearly bought that tan merino wool sweater. I was like, nah, I wouldn't look good in a tan sweater, but I did buy a gray one. So me and Adam Scott have one thing in common. We have the same sweater, just in a couple different sizes different.
So now, speaking of Joaquin Niemann's clubs, the thing that came up, and this is what I wanted to get to, was for someone who has the speed that he does, he only plays Project X 6.0s in his irons. And the big takeaway for me is he doesn't create a lot of dynamic loft. So that softer shaft really helps. Is that something you would kind of direct in a fitting, Mike, if someone's doing that?
100%. I mean, there's so many ways that you can tighten up someone's dispersion, but you know, for what he's delivering that club to, I mean, you're right. He needs something that's going to help the ball get up in the air a little bit more. And the kid's fast. He's very, very fast. I can call him a kid because he is younger than me. Yeah, 100%. That's exactly where we'd go. I've done it in fits myself. I notice he only plays 4 to 9 in the eye blade, and then drops right down into a 46 degree glide. So, again, we did a video on that not too long ago. It's nice to see. But the guy's a complete player, and anyone who uses a DI and a driver is a favorite of mine.
I can distinctly remember watching him at the President's Cup. Like, to me, like, you know, we'd seen him play. We'd won a tournament before, came out on tour extremely young, never even sniffed losing his card, always played very, very well. But to watch him play Royal Melbourne and watch him get around that golf course with his lower ball flight and just hit the shots, like, it was pretty cool to watch. I think he is younger than Colin Morikawa. Like, that's the thing. Like, he's a young guy. Like, he's still, he's way younger than you. He's still way younger than me, younger than you, but he is a young guy and he's got a lot of potential out there.
Totally. No, he's going to be a good player. I mean, he obviously, his first one was in 2019, and took him another couple of years to get one, but he almost won Tournament of Champions last year in Hawaii and had a couple runners up. So I think I was talking to a customer today. I love the, something we didn't see 15 years ago of like other players waiting for that player to, make the final putt on the 18th hole. And you used to see Sergio kind of, that's his, his role model. And, Seve was kind of that to Sergio. So it's kind of cool to see. I know Sergio's from Spain and Niemann's from Chile, but all those guys from that kind of group, they all speak the same language. They all kind of hang out and support each other. I think that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. I think I read a thing. A lot of the Spanish speaking players will like get a house together. So, you know, you kind of speak your own language around everything. It's like makes kind of simple. Thought that was kind of neat. Now, again, next part I want to touch on, which I think is really cool before we get to our irons list. And that is, you know, seen the debate before. Trust me, I've lived on golf forums enough. I've seen this crap all the time. But I think this should just RIP every scratch male golfer out there, you know, who wants to drop whatever they can. I say this, I will note that I've been wearing it the last couple of days anyways, but I'm wearing my LPGA Tour tie-dye hoodie. Shout out Michelle Wee. Not that she's a listener, not probably not. But either way, Hannah Green won a mixed event in Australia. Now, this was not from the same tees, respectively, but same course, same pins, same days. She beat everybody. And this is the first time this has ever happened. And I think this is probably one of the coolest and most underreported stories for, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the golf world that doesn't involve tournament golf at the moment, but one of the most underrated stories of the year so far. And I think it's really cool. Like, you know, you've obviously, like, we work with some LPGA Tour players. Like, it's really cool to see like just how great they are when it comes to playing golf.
Yeah. I mean, I've actually had the opportunity to work with, just one time she flew in to get some work done through Gareth Rafluski, and she came in for an iron fit or just kind of doing a spec check on her set. And that was Emily Talley. And she was, I mean, she striped it. Unfortunately, she's a Bama fan, so I kind of gave her the gears for that, but she striped it, and it was so impressive. She's like, oh, I kind of missed that. And like the dispersion around the green was like 3 yards wide or something like that. I was like, that's a miss. I mean, shoot me. Obviously we've worked with Rebecca Lee a bunch of times. And again, another great ball striker. I'm for the mixed events, bring more of them out. I think it's entertaining. I think you would bring, you know, if it's mixed, more ladies to watch when their husbands are watching on a Sunday kind of thing, you know, grow the game that way. But, you know, it's a pretty impressive win, you know, regardless of the tees, doesn't matter if she's playing forward or playing back. I mean, a win's a win, and it's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. And I would love to see a mixed event tournament of champions. It makes the most 100%. Sense completely when it comes to like smaller fields. You've got like, they do it in Hawaii, like they do this West Coast event, you get a lot of people viewing it. You can still get a lot of people through. You can play the tournament separately if you want, like, you know, LPGA Tour and PGA Tour, they probably want to do a separate tournament, but have them play the same course, have them play the same pins. I think it'd be fantastic for golf. And, you know, you speak to the point of like, the husband and wives, like I understand that, but like for me, I got a young daughter now. She knows, like she literally told me the other day, she came downstairs. She goes, "Dad," because she was like dressing up in like costume and stuff. So she said to me, "Daddy, you stay in that room. You watch your favorite channel with the golf on, and I'm going to go get a costume on, and then I'm going to show you." And she walked in a couple times, and like she'll see highlights. She'll go, "That's ladies' golf. Can we watch that?" And she wants to watch it. Like she identifies it, and I think. You know, it's cool to see like professionals one way or the other, but like I think that we kind of forget this is like a 4-year-old kid that like just identifies and says like, oh, it's someone like me. They're playing golf like you do, Daddy. And she'd sit and watch for an hour. I can't get her to watch anything other than Peppa Pig or, you know, Daniel Tiger for more than 30 minutes. And I can remember a couple of times she just sat there and watched it. So that was fascinating. She also seems to like commercials a lot too, which is kind of funny. But I think that's so cool. It's a cool story. And you know, I think there definitely should be more of it in golf.
I totally agree.
Now, as I said, and as we teased off the top, Mike, today we're doing something a little different. You know, we're both, I think, some iron fans for sure. I kind of know where you're going to go with this. And now it has me thinking, like, should I rethink my list immediately? But I won't. I'm not going to change anything. And we're going to do our top 5 irons. I do happen to have some honorable mentions, but I will let you kick it off, Mike, in no particular order. What is going to be the first iron on your top 5 list?
I'm going to go 2008 VR Pro TW iron.
Now, that's why did you pick that?
First ever fit cart I ever went through myself was a Nike fit cart at my old home club. I opened this box that they used to have like individual gray boxes in the foam and stuff like that. And pulled out a set, and it was loose heads. It wasn't even fitting heads, and it was 2 iron to pitching wedge. And I was given the 6 iron or 7. I was given an 8 iron. And that was the first club I ever shafted up myself, which was probably a year after Silke, 2009. I still have that 8-iron, and it's the best feeling 8-iron. It's the best looking. I'm a huge Tiger fan. I'm sure we have figured that out by now. I just love the shape of it. I love the toe's not boxy. It's just everything's super clean about it. I've got a full set of them now, and I will probably look at them before I go to bed after we record this podcast.
I always like how thin that top line is.
And so good.
It's a really clean looking blade. You get the contrast of the top, like the frosted area, and then the chrome, and again, T-dub on the toe and the red line across the back. I actually like the ones before the VRs, because they're like the full chrome and the straight muscle versus the slightly curved. But there is something about those blades that I think are, that's a good choice. That's a good first call. I do not, well, actually I was going to say, I don't have a blade, but I do, but we're taking the Wayback Machine here, because I think the name is synonymous with blades. The name is synonymous with the idea of a player's iron. Now, a lot of people are going to say this name, they're going to think of something modern, but we're going old school. We're going with Ben Hogan and the original Apex iron. The original Apex came out in 1972. The one before it was 1970, called the Bounce Sole. The iron is actually identical. I do own a set of Bounce Soles. I don't own the Apex, but it had this like shifting weight bar from top to bottom. It kind of like had this middle muscle that would move up and down depending on the iron. And, you know, I think it's such a cool looking golf club. We see some of that stuff now with the reshaping from like National Custom. They do some really cool like blades that look just kind of like that. They do a lot of recreations of stuff like that. And to me, I still think Hogan, I still love the idea of like a Hogan blade. So for me, I can't go any further without talking about the original Hogan Apex, because the Apex name lives on with Callaway, but you know, we're going to stick with Hogan on this one. So, Mike, what's your number two, or I guess four, I don't know, however we want to order it.
Number two for me. And this is, see, I feel like my stuff's a lot newer. I got some really, really old stuff in here. The Titleist T blades. I have a lovely set of those. And, again, maybe it's because it's T dubs, but, it is just such a classic looking set of irons. I have used them. I have played golf with them. They don't go anywhere, but the 2-iron again feels amazing. I'm not an amazing ball striker, but if I was stupid enough, which I am, I would probably play them all season.
So I'm gonna nail you down here for a second, Mike. What do you think of the short irons? Do you like the shape of them? Like, is it a modern versus classic thing for you? Like, I got in your use to those old school classic higher heel blades, but how does it sit for you, especially compared the contrast from the Nike to the Titleist?
Yeah, from the Titleist, I mean, you know, I would say when you drop down from 7 to wedge, one, there's a lot of offset. Two, it's very boxy. It looks large. It looks very spoony in a way, but they feel amazing. And to own a set is, I don't know, it's pretty cool. Like I said, I feel like this is all blades, but we get into some different irons in a second.
Yeah, if those people who are listening are not familiar, you can look at something like a 680, very similar blade style. A lot of the late 90s, early 2000s blades from Titleist had that shape, because it was designed to, you know, we're transitioning from Balata to like the multi-layer urethane golf ball. So in that time, the idea of like a much higher center of gravity to be able to do that, that's why you have that very rounded shape. I know a lot, like Mizuno got crap for the longest time for like the size of their pitching wedges. It was more of like a Japanese influence. So it had this big high heel, very round, very spoony. MP5, I think, would be one. 33 was pretty big. So for those ideas, like when I'm kind of like breaking that down, that's what I'm talking about. And that's why I was curious of your take on that. Cause you know, I feel like we're a decade apart, Mike. So like, the way that I look at a club like that, I'm like, oh, I saw that when I was a kid. But how does that translate for you when you're used to looking at a Nike blade versus that? So you definitely notice that, though. There is a shape difference, like 100%.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, I've actually used these. I've taken them out to the golf course. They're actually sitting in my locker at the golf course right now. They're the Trunk Slammer set, just a set of irons when you want to go play the 9-hole course. Yeah, it's definitely different shapes and stuff like that, but still they – I mean, they cut through the turf. There's like no bounce on these things whatsoever. It feels like they get stuck. So you really got to power through it. But yeah, that's number two for me.
I think there's a reason why Adam Scott used that style of iron, that like 680 for, you know, he grew up in Melbourne, or I guess played, I don't say grew up in Melbourne, but he like played golf in Australia where it's very dry as a junior. So he got used to being not as steep. And I think that's a good representation. So I like that pick, Mike, you know, as a classic blade lover, great pick, great choice. I am not going with another blade at the moment. This was something that I think maybe it's because of my time in retail. It kind of shifted my thought process of like what was a popular iron, what had a lot of staying power. And that is the TaylorMade Rack series. The Rack lived like the original LT and the OS. The original LT was designed by the person who designed the Tommy Armor 845s, John Hoflich. If I don't, I hopefully I got that name right.
Sorry, John.
Yeah, John H. It's in there. So originally designed the 845. Designed this rack iron very clean from a dress. The first edition had the LT on the hosel. Second one had the badge on the back. So it is a different model, the original two, but the rack name lived for a very long time, lived in players irons with the blades, lived in the rack OS, rack CGB, those big, massive titanium face tungsten plug irons. Like those things were huge. They sounded clunky, but they were very forgiving, like everything about it. But that original rack series set that entire thing off, even the wedges. I got one of the old wedges. It's like lovely. But I think as a series and kind of what that did for TaylorMade moving forward in the modern, like kind of 2000, 2004, 2003 era, like to me, that was like, that kind of set them off for like close to a decade when it came to designing irons. Honorable mention, the 09 burners. Gosh, those things were fantastic. But the rack series for me was the one that's got to be my number two, because I just think it was an iron that lived for a very, very long time. And you still talk to people, that LT was just absolutely perfect for shape, feel, size, everything.
Yeah, it's a good pick. I like that. That's a classic burner 09, man. Oh man, I had a set of those. They were unbelievable.
I can remember my kind of foray into the custom fitting space. And the old joke was, if someone came in with, and I'm talking so like 5 to 10 years after that iron came into existence, it was like, no, if someone comes in with a set of burner 09s, like they're probably leaving with burner 09s. Like,
yeah,
if they're looking for distance, they're looking for forgiveness, you're going to be very, very hard pressed to beat that iron. It wasn't because Camilo wasn't a TaylorMade staff at the time. He came on with like RBZ about 5 to 10, like 5, 5, 6 years later. But on tour, like a tour issue set, there were burner B irons. So there were like these blade looking, no offset burner irons. I've never seen a set in person. I've seen lots of pictures of them kind of floating around the internet. There was also an RBZ, which was around that same time, tour set, like tour issue B set that Camilo played. Those looked freaking sick. Imagine a set of those rack LTs but look like RBZs. Like that to me was like the epitome of like what would be like a cool tour issue iron at the time. Impossible to find at this point because there's probably like 30 sets ever made, but I always think like, man, that would be so cool to have.
I had burner 09s, and then the R9 iron was so nice. It just kind of looked like the badge of a Cadillac, an old classic Cadillac, and there was a couple boys at the club that had them, and I was not good enough to use those at the time, but I think, what was that stuff called? Inverted
cone technology. ICT.
Yeah. ICT. When I was looking up some irons a couple nights ago or whatever, I was like, man, I remember those. They were just so good. But yeah, the 2009 irons from TaylorMade were impressive.
They were that whole line again, like the R9. Speaking to that, I didn't even have that on my list, but the R9Bs, which originally were a tour product and came out in retail in limited fashion, still one of my favorite looking irons of all time. A little bit longer heel toe. It was like a less offset version of the TaylorMade 300 series forged.
Yeah.
I love that iron. I will say the R9 irons, the like OG non-TP or non-tour ones or whatever, they were so fast because it was one of like the first harder castings. I broke a bending bar bending one of those six irons one time. Now, don't get me wrong, this is like a big box retail store. This bending bar had probably lived in there for a decade. I was leaning on it and the thing just went, and I thought I broke the iron, and I actually broke the bending bar. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to bend these things anymore. They're not moving a damn degree.
Should bring that TP badge back. That always looked cool.
Yeah. Do you know? Do you remember the? Do you know the origin of that? Do you know where it came from?
Not really.
So as a racing fan, it was partially stolen from the Corvette. There's a lot of, because if you remember a lot of the TaylorMade putters, this is where, like, I'm going to just completely geek out in my nerdness of golf club garbage here. But the TP badge came from the original Corvette badge. If you look that up, it is very similar with like the racing flags and all that stuff. But that's also, I think at the time they had a huge amount of racing influence from the design team over at TaylorMade, because a lot of their putters were like Monza. So they all had like these racetrack names. I didn't even know what it was. Like, you literally couldn't have, you had no relationship to racing at all. Huh. But, and then like Marlana, like all these things, all racing names. So that's where, if you're looking up, a lot of the old TaylorMade putters, that's where they came from. And that's where the TP logo came from as well. Welcome to my nerdiness and the things that live in my brain that I don't need and aren't useful except for when I'm talking to you, Mike.
There you go.
What is your third iron? Are you sticking with blades? You got something else this time?
Yeah, I mean, technically it's a muscle back, and it's because I have a set. I've had a set for a few years now, and I currently play them. I'm going to go Miura MC501. I think it is one of the best looking irons from the back. I think it just stands out. It is a blade that's very easy to hit for certain handicaps. Again, fight a little bit of the offset. Thankfully for me working on my swing, I can weaken the lofts a little bit and take some of the offset away. I've been playing with that the last couple weeks. So MC501 Miura. I mean, anyone who's listening, I did a poll last night. Have you hit a Miura iron before? And like 78% of the people were like, no, never hit one. Well, do yourself a favor. 78% of the people that follow me on Instagram and hopefully listen to this podcast, go find somewhere where you can hit them. Comes to a TXG, go to a Club Champion, find somewhere where you can hit them and test them and see what they feel like. There is a difference. I know people say nothing feels like a Mizuno. The forgings are great and stuff like that. Miuras are special. I mean, I know RB, you've got some MB101s, and you know, I remember the baby blades, and you know, any Miura iron, 901, 801 lefty, TC201. I mean, the stuff is unbelievable. It is, it legitimately is. Yeah. I mean, that should have been number one, but it's going to sit at number three.
Can you remember the first Miura iron that you hit? Cause I could, as a kid reading golf forums, and like, it was always something that like you could strive to like find, but it wasn't like there were custom shops. You'd have to like order one club and, you know, $300 or $400 for an iron at the time for like a kid was like completely unreachable. But do you remember the first Miura iron that you hit, whether it was a Miura specifically or not? Do you have that in like kind of in your like memory?
Yeah, the first ever Miura iron I hit was, believe it or not, a baby blade. And it was 2000. I mean, that would have been 2009, 2008, maybe 2010. There was a fitting truck in that used to drive around kind of the Golden Horseshoe. And it's the first time I ever tried steel fiber as well. So yeah, that would be kind of the first time. And it was, honestly, it went through the turf a little bit different than anything else I hit. And it was, yes, it was definitely harder to hit. I did hit the 001 blade after, and it's just a special sound and feel. And it's, I know we have an open invite to go to Japan and go to the Miura factory. I think it's, maybe that would make good content. It's something that definitely needs to be done, because I really do love their product.
I actually just watched this whole mini documentary on how they make tuna, for how they catch and bid on tuna for sushi over in Japan. So that has me completely fascinated now, Mike. We'll take that offline. I think the PCB tour for McGregor, which was a catalog pull from Miura 301, not the current 301, the original 301 CB iron. You can kind of find that, I think, like mid 90s. That was my first Miura iron that I kind of searched out knowing it was a Miura forged one. But I think the baby blade was the first for me as well. Like the first real Miura iron, when I kind of got into the custom fitting world and, you know, opened up a drawer and saw Miura irons and all that stuff, I was like, well, I got to hit it. Like, I've literally waited, you know, 15 years or 10 years to try and hit one of these things. And the amount of mass they put behind the center of the club head, higher hosel, all that stuff, the way they do it, you can buy into the spin weld hosel or not. I think it's a cool, I think it's a really cool like manufacturing process. It's extremely, as someone who builds golf clubs, they are beyond precise when it comes to the hosel depths and all that stuff. But they do feel like extremely, extremely solid. And I think for those who are curious, I think it's something that's really cool to try. And they, I don't have mirrors on my list, but as someone who owns a set of 101s, they are very, very fun to play with. Now, speaking of blades, my third iron on my list is the Mizuno MP33.
It's shocker, not shocker, Captain Mizuno right there.
I know. I knew you was going to, one was going to make it on the list at some point.
To be fair, you are right. This is, I'll let you go on, but this is a nice iron.
This is not my favorite Mizuno blade, but I think from mine's a 37 because it's square. I actually don't like, much like the 680, the T blade, like the T stamp, all this stuff. The 33s to me are a little rounded in the shorter iron. So I'm not like a huge, huge fan overall of the aesthetic. But the reason they are my, like, I think they're in my top five is because when people think of like what a Mizuno iron looks like, a lot of people have a hard time, say, identifying what a 37 looks like. Everyone knows what an MP33 looks like. Yeah. It was a lower center of gravity, you know, relative blade, very easy to hit, rounded shape. I think when people think of a Mizuno blade iron, they still think of the, I think most modern players are going to think of a 33. Relatively easy to hit for an iron. And I just think it kind of set this tone for like what that iron could be. And it lived for almost a decade in their line. Like you could still custom order it much after it kind of existed. So I have to say, it has to be on the list to me. Cause I think it's the one, if you think of blade irons and that shape to me is just like what stands out for them. Not in my head as a personal favorite, but I think as like most golfers would kind of fit into that category. The MP33 for me is the third on my list. I gotta say it, you know, the other one that kind of stands out just because it was the iron that I finally got a set of these things was the 32 cut muscle, still a cool looking iron, still awesome, but you know, that's my honorable mention, but this for me is the one that stands out and has to be the 33 from Mizuno.
Pick.
You ever had a set of those or you hit those?
I've never hit those. I've never hit them. My first set of Mizunos is number four on my list.
Do tell.
Which is Mizuno MS9, a very old Mizuno. My very first set of Mizunos. They have rifle blank 6.5s in them. I'm pretty sure the pitching wedge is 52 degrees aloft, two to pitching wedge. I absolutely love the set. I have, I had them as a trunk slamming set for a long time. They were given to me by one of our builders and, he had three or four sets of them. And one day we got invited to play golf last minute. I used, that old Nike VR Pro driver I had in a two to pitching wedge set of MS9s and played one of my best rounds that year with just a driver and two to pitching wedge and a putter, an Arnold Palmer putter from Value Village that this other builder bought and had it in his car. So maybe I don't need 14 clubs after all.
Are you talking like an Arnold, like not like some like Walmart branded Arnold, like you're
no,
Arnold
like, Palmer, like the blade, right? Like, yeah something from like, I was thinking it was from the 60s.
Nice. I got one of those, like a Wilson style one. They're a fun club to have. They're fun to putt with.
Yeah.
That's a different conversation when it comes to putter styles, but I think that the Wilson 8802, 8803, the Cleveland did one with Crenshaw and the Palmer one. I think Palmer was called the original at the time. I think I can't remember exactly, but I think that was the one of the names that they had for.
It's going to have to do a top five putters of all time.
What's going to be the ping answer and then the ping answer and the ping answer and then something else and then a two ball.
Newport two.
Newport two. Exactly. Yeah. So now do you want me to go for my like number four on the list or you want to go next? We keep our order the way we're going.
No, keep your order. Go ahead.
All right. So number four, I'm going to mention top five, whatever. It's on the list. I think this iron revolutionized the category. I truly do, because I can distinctly remember it being absolutely everywhere, not just on tour, because there was this, again, we're well into the multi-layer golf ball at this point, but introducing technology to better players, it kind of existed, but you had to sacrifice. You had to use something that was a little bit bigger, maybe a little wider sole, all this stuff. You know, people would still use them, but there was this sacrifice. And this iron to me didn't have to sacrifice. And that is the original 2008 AP2. I remember the golf course that I played at was a, we'll call it like a higher end corporate clubland course. So like Club Corp in the States, if you're listening in the States, you know, a lot of people that had memberships of different golf courses, this iron was everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. You could see it in like good players' bags, mid handicappers' bags. It was just the thing that stuck out all the time. And like welding the tungsten and nickel box to the bottom of that sole to create a multi-piece, somewhat hollow iron that offered forgiveness, offered a pretty like good feeling iron, wasn't overly large. That to me is just something that has really pushed, you know, something we tested a couple of weeks ago, which is the player's cavity, the player's technology. This to me kicked off that revolution.
Yeah, that's a good point. I have, that is a great point. I mean, I'm going to sound like I had a lot of sets of irons from 2008 to 2010, but I did have a set of the, I guess I had 710 AP2s, but I also had for like a couple months, I ordered my 710s. They were taking too long to come in. So my pro at the time gave me the 2008 AP2s with X100 dynamic golds and red and black multi-compounds. The only time I ever used a multi-compound grip. And I wish I never got rid of them, because you're right, it did change that category of iron, even as a, I don't know, a 10 handicap at the time. You know, I put them in the bag, and my uncle like came over to my house that time, and he kind of looked and he goes, "Woof, you better start practicing a lot." I was like, "Oh, don't worry, I'll make them work." And obviously over time I got, you know, incrementally better. But yeah, that's a great show. That those AP2s. I was going to write, you know, the 7 series from Titleist, you know, 7, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18 to T100, T100S. I mean, that whole line of irons is just iconic. It's one of the best.
There's not a miss in that entire category. I think if you look at that AP2 line, there's always been progression. There's always been a big like kind of step forward for them. And I never had the original ones. I think I had the 712s, because it would have been right around the time that I got like the summer contract with Titleist, that I was doing like demo days and stuff. So when they gave me the opportunity to order clubs, I was like, ring me up for some AP2s, baby, send them over some Vokey wedges. We'll be all set for this year.
I will say I was very fortunate through my dad's work that every Titleist release, I got new iron. So I played anywhere from 710 to I think 714 was my last set. Yeah, 714 was my last set of Titleist irons. But man, I love the AP2, and I'm a massive fan of T100S right now, the 2021 version. Hopefully those end up in my bag this year. We will see what happens.
Yeah, we won't tease anything. We'll just say that Ryan did an iron fitting this week. Not to go meta and talk about myself or a third person there, but I did an iron fitting this week on the channel. We'll see it hopefully coming up next few days or maybe next week. And yeah, some interesting results. I don't hit a 6-iron 160 yards anymore. Let's put it that way. It didn't mean I had to go to a 25 degree 6-iron either. So I think that's going to be a pretty cool one, because I know a lot of people have been maybe bugging me that I add a lot of loft and impact. So we've been trying to work on that and have some fun. But what was your next one the 700 series, or did you have something else?
No, my last one, number 5, I'm going to say Srixon Z500 series. So 545, 565, 585, and ZX5, I think is a real industry shaker since it came out. I think there's more Srixons in people's bags than any of the other big OEMs would ever think there'd be another brand of irons. For us as a club fitting company, you know, other than, you know, maybe Titleist has taken over the title the last couple of years, but Srixon ZX5, ZX7 for us has been by far the best club to fit with. The V sole, there's some technology in the iron, very easy to bend, forged by Endo. I mean, you really can't get, you're getting super high quality forging for the fraction of the cost of what it would be for someone else to do it. Yeah. Shout out to Srixon. The Z500 series has just been
world class.
That's a good call. I always know like the 745s to me was like the one that kind of kicked it off. And if you think back to the, I think it was the 503s, and then there's this, I think it was called the 701. So there was a 701 and 701 tour. If you look back at the lineage before we got to the like 745, the like that's the 701 and 701 tour, you had the complete DNA of the 545 and the 745. It didn't have the soul quite so much.
Yeah.
There was like a ZX series when Graham McDowell signed with them. There was this like series of irons before that had some kind of like tungsten in the back. It looked cool, but it was like very busy. But this to me, like you make a great point. Like I think what they've done with their irons in the last 8 years has been for the, for people who are looking at performance, looking at different brands, they're going to walk into a shot. They might not think Strixon right off the bat, but you put them in their hands and it like, I did on my Instagram the other day. I put down this, a six iron that I had kicking around and I was like, do you know what this is? And people were like, oh, that looks sick. That looks like this blade or this, whatever that. And I was like, it's actually a ZX7. Yeah. And it was like, wow. Like, okay. Like to me, like you, cause you played that combo set, right? Like you've had that for a while.
Yeah. I played seven. I can't remember if I played 765s or 785s. I think I played 765s. I don't remember. 785s is what I played. You know, 4 and 5 iron have always been the ZX5 or the 5 series. ZX5, ZX7, just amazing, amazing irons. Really, really. Again, anyone listening to this, if you haven't tested any Strixon stuff, do yourself a favor. Go hit some Mura, go hit some Strixon and call it a day.
Yeah, I think if... No, when it comes to say something like wedges, people always think of Vokey. And, you know, there's a lot of great wedge companies out there. You've got obviously Cleveland, you've got Adele, you've got Mizuno, Cobra's got some good wedges out there as well. Like there's not a bad Callaway as well. Like everyone's got a good one. TaylorMade. I feel like I don't want to
Bridgestone.
Bridgestone. I don't want to piss anyone off here, but like everyone makes a really good wedge. Ping too. Let's give them a shout out because the hydrophobic, like we tested it, stuff works. That stuff freaking works. But when it comes to irons, you can go off brand and like off like the big, like 3 or 4, and you can find a ton of performance. And I think Strixon sits on that edge of like, oh, they make golf balls. And then people are like, oh, like, no, their irons are sick. Like absolutely freaking sick. And they still fly under the radar for those who aren't like equipment junkies or gear junkies, but That's a great call, Mike. I think naming a Strixon, I didn't have a Strixon iron on my list, but I think like just naming them as an overall arching, even like brand to look at, good call. Like really, really good call. Last but not least for me, this is definitely like, you know, going old school, going retro on this. I think this iron from a sales perspective, number one selling iron of all time. If you like kind of put all the models together, probably rolling your eyes, you probably know what it is at this point already. One of the most famous wedges of all time, which has donned like wedges that's still made by this OEM, as well as another OEM, which is much inspired. That's also like a couple of other OEMs have done. And that is the Ping I2. This came like this inspired the, as I mentioned earlier, the 845. That was number, there was like the 845 actually became the number two best-selling iron of all time. But the I2 in all of its iterations, Soul Designs, I2 Plus, I2 No Plus, set off a litigation with the USGA for as far as grooves was concerned. The wedges are still like an iconic shape, offset, hosel, everything about them. To me, the I2 still stands as the absolute greatest iron of all time. And the reason I say that is if you have $150, maybe even less, if you find them at a thrift store, you can go out, you can buy this set of golf clubs, you can take them to the golf course, and you're going to have fun. They're not going to go as long. They're not going to be as forgiving as a lot of the other stuff because Ping will very much tell you that like something like what was the newest blade? The iBlade. The iBlade has a higher MOI than an I2. But as far as enjoyment for $150, you're never going to get a better deal than a used set of I2s. And for me, that's my number one iron of all time.
I have something to confess.
Don't tell me you've never hit one.
I have never hit a Ping I2 ever. Now, I always used to laugh at the look of it, but the more and more as I got like through the golf industry and stuff, people had them and stuff. I used to caddy for a guy at the club I used to work for, and he had a brand new set of beryllium copper irons. And he said to me one time, he's like, do you want them? And I said, absolutely, I would love them. And they were never hit beryllium coppers. And I sold them and they paid for my car my first year in college. But I have never hit a set of I2s to this day. I kick myself for getting rid of those beryllium's, but when you need four wheels to go 50 kilometers to work, you got to do what you got to do. I know there's a, we're trying to create a video for the channel of some older equipment, and kind of piece some clubs together. And I was looking at a website and I almost bought a set of I2s with the budget that I had allocated for my, for the channel. So I might buy a set of I2s just for that.
It was my very first set of real irons and I had the I2 plus no plus. So it was this like more rare I2 plus version that came before the I2 plus. And to not to boil it down, it had different groove, and different sole and different loss, but it didn't have the markings yet. It was kind of in this between point when they were between models. And much to your point, Mike, I wish I never sold them. I think I actually traded them in for a Scotty Cameron putter. I don't own that Scotty Cameron putter anymore. And it was a great putter. I love that putter. But if there's anything, I wish I had that iron set back, because I still find them on eBay. I still see them on eBay or something. I'm like, hey, you know, they're in good shape. You know, a couple $100. It'd be really fun to have. I want that plus, no plus. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to go all in on like trying to get something. But you can't believe have you ever found an old wedge that you've hit, or like you just never hit them?
I have never hit them.
That's crazy. You've never hit an I2.
Never hit an I2. And I've, like I said, honestly, I was on the internet a couple nights ago playing around and I was like, maybe I should just buy a set. It was like $200. You know, I would maybe send them back to get refinished just so they look cool, and, or just maybe bash them around. I would, you know, I know reshafting those is fun and makes a lot of smoke, but, I've never hit one, and I'd love to, because I know a lot of people. We got a guy's wedge, a lob wedge, refinished for him, and they, you know, this company we use recut the grooves into it and stuff like that. And the guy's like, I just can't get rid of this wedge. And I was like, okay, no worries, we'll get it refinished for you. So, I need to hit a set of those. I think that'd be fun to do.
The first time I ever saw a set of beryllium's was at the only golf course I ever worked at. I was working in the back shop, and the greenskeeper or superintendent, he played like five times a year. Like, you know, he liked golf, but it was just like, I want to go home. Like, I don't want to kick around the golf course. But you'd see him at the range and he'd bring out his bag after work and hit like 50 balls and go home. But he had a set of like two to pitching wedge beryllium coppers. I'm like, do you still use those? And at the time, like, they were still like 15 years old at the time. And he's like, yeah, I'm never getting rid of these things. Like, I'm legitimately never, I'm going to die and I'm still going to own this set of irons. Like, he was never going to switch. He didn't care. Played a few, like five times a year. He's probably like literally like a 5 to 10 handicap golfer, just didn't care. And I always remember seeing those like super oxidized, really like dark patina. I thought, man, I want a set of those. And you know what? Maybe one day. But Mike, that was a good list. I like this. I think this is something we got to try again. Maybe it'll be fairway woods. Maybe like, you know, classic glued hosel drivers, like, you know, permanent fixed hosel drivers. We got to do something else, because I think this was a lot of fun and takes me down like the memory lane to stuff that I've owned. And, you know, for your young whippersnapper age, Mike, you've owned a lot of iron sets.
Yeah, I've owned a lot of iron sets. And as we're doing this podcast, I just found a set of two to pitching wedge beryllium copper, right-handed red dot, used for $500. And this might be an expensive evening.
Well, you know what? We'll leave it at that, Mike. I'll let you get to your eBay shopping, but that was a lot of fun. I know I truly enjoyed it. I want to, if you've listened to this, you've gone this far and you thought this was a lot of fun, tell us what would be your number one iron. Let me know. RDS Brath on Instagram. Reach out to Mike as well. Mike TXG, correct? Got that right?
Mike TXG, nice and simple.
Easy to remember. And, you know, I think we're going to do more of this. This was fun. Bringing back some memories, that stuff that we played. I think there's a lot of stuff out there that we didn't include, which I think a lot of people might listen to this and say, why didn't you include that? Why didn't you include that? And maybe we'll save that for next time. But to everyone out there that enjoyed the show, give us some feedback. Remember, like, comment, subscribe, leave a comment on wherever you listen to your podcast. It always really helps. And as always, thanks for listening.